And hello, it is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Well, we have a special show today because, well, it's on during the afternoon, and it is a repeat performance with a very unique and distinguished guest, which is Thomas Campbell. And Thomas is a nuclear physicist, as well as he's written a book on consciousness called My Big Toe. Actually, it's a series of three books that on my big toe, and is in Toronto to do a workshop this weekend, and there's a showing of a movie tonight that you're in.
Yes.
At the Harbor Castle, which in Dockside 9, the room. So I hope everybody can join us because that's a free event.
That is a free event.
Yes. So let's begin. This is kind of unique because I don't often get to have interviews side by side like this. So I'm going to go back to some of the main concepts that we talked about in our last interview last week. Really, just to expand on, because some of our listeners, including myself, may not have been as aware of some of your major concepts, which is about, you know, the consciousness, data, and metaphors. So when I was thinking about it this week, you know, I thought about, okay, so I've heard that our eyes don't actually see and our ears don't actually hear. It's really the input that goes to our brain that allows us to see and to hear. It's so, in that sense, that's data. Is that correct?
That is correct. Think of yourself as a consciousness that is receiving a data stream of information, and that information defines for you your reality, what you see and hear and smell and touch. And you're in a multiplayer game, so there's other people that are involved. And the best analogy to kind of get a grip, this is something that's very hard to get an intuitive feel for, but the best analogy is a computer simulation game.
Yeah.
And think of it in the same way as that. And we're the characters in this computer simulation game. Another way to look at it is that if someone could stimulate your auditory and your visual nerves in exactly the same way that, you know, they are being stimulated now, you would see and hear exactly what you're seeing and hearing now. So it's just information. Information is brought into your nervous system. It turns into electrical impulses and neurons, and that data is discrete. The impulses and the neurons are discrete things. They're not continuous. So it's discrete data, and then you interpret that data.
Right.
And when you interpret that data, well, it's a picture. You know, it's you and I sitting, you know, across from each other with microphones, and that's how we interpret the data. Mm-hmm. But it's just data.
Right.
Now, if you can simulate that data, and if you can impose the exact same electrical impulses and the exact same motion of neurons, then you'll see the exact same picture. So now get rid of the idea of the objective reality that's creating those things and just have the data.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the same picture. So yes, there we are as consciousnesses receiving this data input that we interpret as physical reality. So that's kind of the fundamental idea here.
Mm-hmm.
And as bizarre as that sounds, it actually solves an awful lot of problems. It solves problems in physics. It allows us to derive quantum mechanics. It allows us to derive relativity. It allows us to understand a lot of the kind of the big mysteries that are in science. And it also derives metaphysics. So it also allows you to understand point, purpose, value, you know, what are we here for? You know, all of the metaphysical questions tend to fall out of that too. So the way we look at theories is that if you have a theory, how well does that theory fit the data? You know, what does it explain? What does it bring to you that makes things make sense that didn't make sense before? So that's basically the value of it. And I will kind of repeat, it is a model. And I tell everybody, don't confuse the model of reality with reality. This is just a model of reality. But the model explains the data better than the models that we have now.
And really where we come into problems is our own perceptions. It's our own experience, because all the data is really neutral. It's just we give it a value of good or bad or right or wrong or...
Yes, well, we're here to learn, to grow, to evolve the quality of our consciousness. That's our point and purpose for being here. We are part of a larger consciousness system. That system is evolving, and we are evolving as pieces of it. So we're here to grow up, basically, and we have these experiences, and how we interact with each other, how we interact with the set, the physical world, gives us opportunities to make decisions, and those decisions reflect our intent. And if that intent is a positive, is a good intent, is an intent toward love, then we evolve. If the intent is in the opposite direction, we de-evolve. So we're here to experience, to interact. You know, it's kind of a place to mix it up, and it allows us to make those decisions that exercises our intent, which will help us either evolve or de-evolve. Mm-hmm. So that's the point. I think of this reality as a virtual reality training center, mm-hmm. you know, and we're all in this game, and the training is our training to mature and evolve. So that's kind of the point and purpose of it.
The de-evolving, that's a bit of a problem. I mean, that's when we get caught up in our fears and we're projecting our stuff on others. Yeah. And, you know, what do we do to stop that? What do we do? I guess it's just becoming more conscious. I know after our interview and while I was reading some of the material, a situation similar came up and I went, okay, if I'm reacting here out of fear, oh yeah, big time. Okay, so how would I change this to react from a place of love? Or how would I change this to respond from a place of love? And it certainly shifts your perspective.
Yes, and it's generally not something you do with your intellect.
Right.
The intellect is a weak player in this game. And growth has to be from the inside out. It's not something that somebody will explain to you. Oh, you shouldn't be afraid. You know, let go of your fear. Well, those things are easy to say, but very hard to do. It has to be something that comes up from inside of you. It has to come from a deep level. You have to basically grow up, which means change yourself. You have to be different. It's not a matter of acting different. Yeah. Acting different is maybe a first step sometimes toward being different, and sometimes it's not a first step to anywhere. You're just acting, you know, you're playing a role. But you have to change yourself, and it starts with the will to change. It starts with the ability to see what's going on, to be aware that it's fear, to be aware of the source of that fear, and then to have the courage to step right into that fear and deal with it rather than use devices to avoid it or to nullify it or to sneak around it. But fear is the opposite of love. So if we are trying to grow toward love, then fear is what's taking us in the opposite direction. And this doesn't have to be fear like scream and run away. This is fear of not measuring up, you know, fear of not being good enough, insecurities, all these things are fear. Fear of not being lovable, fear of not being competent. So it's not just fear of bodily harm. You know, it doesn't have to be a monster. The fear is mainly the monsters inside, you know, that you're afraid of. You know, it's the monster under the bed, yeah. Right, is the fear. So yes, that is the point. If we're going to grow up in this virtual reality trainer, then we need to deal with that fear. And we have to do that at a deep level of understanding to where we actually change our being and let go of that fear. Not an easy thing to do, but that's our task. And we get plenty of opportunities to do that. You know, every little decision you come to in a day is either a step in the right direction or a step in the wrong direction. So it's the millions of tiny steps that takes you someplace. Not the great leap.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, how much does it hinder us when we get caught up in our fear? Are we able to, when we take those steps towards the love, are we able to shift that so that whatever we've done, because we all get caught up in the everyday tasks of life that we, you know, we're so unconscious, we're just doing things. And then it's like all of a sudden you kind of go, oh, wait a minute. And then you start moving forward again. So is the de-evolution, is that impacting our progress, or do we get to keep moving forward?
Well, we get to go either way. And the reason that we can make poor decisions and the reason that we can get caught up in fear is that we have free will.
Yeah.
Now, if you have free will, you have to be able to go both ways. You have to be able to make good decisions and bad decisions, or you wouldn't have free will. So it's up to us. And you can take a few steps forward and a few steps backward, and you hope that in the end, there's more forward than there is backward, and then you're making progress. But it's not just a simple thing. It is a complicated thing. But fear is the source of ego. It's the source, for the most part, of our wants and needs and desires and the things, we want life and people and our relationships to be a certain way. And fear is usually at the bottom of those needs and wants and desires. Because if fear is self-referential, it's about you. Love is about somebody else. So you can generally tell which direction that arrow is pointing in. If it's pointing away from you to other people, then it's not about you. And it's more likely to be productive. And you're thinking, well, I can project, anger towards other people, but that's not the point. The anger is really about you. It's you that are angry. The other person is just your focus of that anger. But the anger isn't generated by them as much as you would like to think that they make you angry. You have a choice whether to be angry or not. The anger is generated by you. So fear is always a self-focused problem.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how we involve other people in our fears.
Yeah, it's a tough one because we get so caught up, and we're such a victim mentality society that we've been sort of trained to blame the other person. So, learning to accept responsibility, that it's your responsibility, it's a challenge for a lot of people.
Yeah, but that's what you have to do. Yeah, you have to be responsible for yourself and all the things you do. Yeah, if you're angry, if you're upset, if you're feeling, unhappy with your life, it's you. It's not your life. It's not all those other people that are annoying you that are really the problem. The problem is inside. So that's where the growth has to start, and it first starts with an awareness and then a desire to do better. But the good news is that once you learn to drop that fear, your life gets so much better. It's amazing how when you drop your own fears, all the other people in your environment are so much nicer to you, and the world gets so much more pleasant. And it's not because they've changed, it's because you've changed. So if you want to live in a pleasant environment with people who interact in positive ways, then it's not that you have to fix them, it's you have to fix you. And that's the point of being here. Again, it's a trainer for us to learn those lessons.
I want to get back to metaphors at some point, but I do want to talk about, there's a lot of talk out there, and I know that this sort of fits in, but, the secret. There's a lot of talk about how to manifest and how to attract, and, knowing that all of this is data, knowing that all of this, our imagination is just as powerful as the information that we see and hear and feel in what we consider this physical reality. But yet, a lot of the secret seems to be based on greed and ego and, I don't know, how does that fit in?
Well, I did see the movie that talked about the secret. A good friend of mine set me down on a couch and made me watch it. And at the root, fundamentally, they have a very good point, because reality does work that way. You do create your own reality in many ways. Okay, so fundamentally, they are right, but the way they apply that fundamental knowledge is not helpful at all. You're right. It's, do you want a new car?
Yeah.
Do you want to make more money? You know, and it's just all about that. Well, that mainly is just a hustle to get people to pay their money to, you know, learn how to do it or to go to the mm-hmm. seminar or whatever. Because if you come into the idea of change with greed and it's all about me and what can I get, then you're not going to grow very much. This is not going to be a growing thing. So you're going to leave it the same way you came in, maybe even a little worse because you've been spending time wallowing around in your, you know, in your ego and in your greed. So in that sense, you're doing people more harm than good. On the other hand, if you get some people who kind of rise above the greed thing, which is the come on to get people interested. I mean, it's easy to hook people with greed and their wants. If you advertised instead, oh, come in and grow your spiritual, you know, self, you know, learn how to be better. Well, most people would look at you and walk the other way. They're not going to watch your TV program, you know, but if it's get a new car, make more money, then you've got people's attention. So that's the come on. But there may be some people who actually get into that and take it at a deeper, more meaningful level. And those people will probably, you know, do well with it. So I don't say that it's all awful. You know, it's got a root of truth. It's just the application is not really very helpful. But it is true, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, I think it was Norman Vincent Peale wrote a book called The Power of Positive Thinking. It's the same thing. This is not a new idea. It's not exactly a secret, you know. It's been published and talked about, you know, for probably hundreds of years, you know, because reality does work that way. You do make your own reality in many ways. You make it because of your beliefs. Your beliefs are limiters on your reality. Your reality will not generally violate your beliefs because when it does, you ignore it. Mm-hmm. You make excuses of why that isn't so. So you're limited by your beliefs. You have interpretations. You get the data, but you have to interpret it. And your interpretation is the way you see reality. So that's another way you make reality. Also, there's feedback. If you act in a way that makes people dislike you, then you'll find that, you know, that's feedback that you get from your own behavior. If you act in a way that makes people like you and think you're really nice, then you live in a different environment. So that's a way, again, you change your environment. And besides all that, where there is room in uncertainty, so where we have uncertainty in our existence, and there's a lot of uncertainty in our existence, we can modify outcomes just with our intent. And that's what they're talking about. They want to modify outcomes with their intent in those areas where there is uncertainty, where things could go this way or could go that way. You know, they're not nailed down yet. And that's true as well. But to use that to, you know, to get a new car is not productive. You know, it's not on a growth path.
Right.
Is the problem.
Right. And it's all about your intent and your focus.
Yes. And it's not, you know, the point of life is not to get a new car.
No.
You know, that's not why we're here, to see how many toys that we can accumulate, you know, how much beer we can drink and, you know, how much fun we can have. That's not the point. And you can do those things, but you're basically wasting your time.
Well, you know, a lot of people come to me because they're looking for that perfect relationship. So, you know, I tend to tell people, well, don't focus on, you know, the physical things. Focus on the qualities that you're wanting in your life, because it's what you're actually emulating. The qualities that you actually exude are the qualities mm-hmm. that you want to bring to you. And so if you can, you know, embrace those qualities, if you can work with those qualities, then that's how you can bring that intent to you. However, some people get caught up in their beliefs again.
Right. But that is true. You know, if you fix yourself first, which is what we've been saying all along, you know, make yourself the better person, then let everything else take care of itself. You don't go out into the world to manipulate the world to be the way you want it. That usually backfires. Maybe it'll work a little bit of the time, but very soon you end up digging yourself a hole that way. The best way to approach life is to improve yourself. Get yourself right, make yourself positive, turn yourself into love, and then just let the rest of it take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And then things will just happen. You know, things will happen again because you have that attitude, you know, the power of positive thinking. Because you're positive and have that positive energy, you will tend to create an environment to meet that positive energy. Where you have needs to learn, where you have needs to learn lessons about the fact that greed doesn't take you very far in the big picture, you will get those lessons as well. The consciousness system of which we're a part tends to deliver to us what we need and what we deserve in order for us to grow and increase our quality of consciousness or to evolve our consciousness. So we get what we need and deserve. If you're getting a lot of unpleasant stuff, it's probably what you deserve. You need that in order to learn. Unfortunately, we're not good at learning from satisfaction and pleasure. We learn from pain, and that's unfortunate. You don't have to learn from pain. You can learn to learn from things that feel good rather than things that hurt. But most of us aren't at that point yet. We only learn when things are not going right. Then we decide, I have to make a change. There's something wrong here. But as everything is going fine and we're just, having a really good time, then we don't have much incentive to change anything. We just let it go. So typically those things that hurt are because of a lesson that you need to learn to change yourself so that that's not hurt.
Right.
Those are all kind of custom made for each of us to help us grow, which again, that's the point of being here. The system is constantly poking at us to help us learn.
Right. So even though we learn them from someone else or we pick them up from somewhere, they're still our beliefs and they're still things that we are limiting ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, belief is a limitation. And we talk about belief and people immediately think, oh, they're talking about religious belief or this kind of, that's not it. We're talking about belief at the blood and sinew level, belief in the bones. It's part of your culture, things that you believe. And most people don't even know they have these beliefs until they have to or want to go beyond them. And then suddenly they see there's a door there. There's a wall and they can't get through it. And they don't know what it is. They just know they don't seem to be able to get there. I try and I just can't make this happen. Well, there's probably a belief that's limiting you, and you can't make that happen because of something you believe. It's self-generated. It's inside of you. The consciousness system does not construct walls in front of you to frustrate you. Those walls are there because you create them from your own beliefs. Your beliefs are probably, if I had to name an enemy, I would say, it's fear and beliefs. Those are the things that hold us back more than anything. So instead of a belief, you should be open-minded, and you should be skeptical. You should always be skeptical because otherwise you can wander down paths that are non-productive if you're not skeptical. So skepticism is important, but being open-minded is important too. Those two together are a very powerful tool for kind of working with anything.
In the metaphysical community, I think we call that discernment, but I'm not sure, what the difference is between mm-hmm. discernment and skepticism. I mean, I think, I guess we have to measure it the only way we can measure it, which is through ourselves. But, it's a challenge to know what is real or I guess it's not real, it's what we are perceiving.
Yeah, and the best way to find out is if you are open-minded, you can do experiments. It's to do experiments. And, I'm a scientist, so I come from that idea set that when you don't know something, you do experiments to find out. So if you're open-minded, you can usually see that there's one of several possibilities. And then you do experiments. You try it this way, try it that way. Compare the difference in the results, and you do this over and over and over again until your skepticism recedes to a point that you're fairly sure that you know what you're doing. But the skepticism should never go away. In other words, you're gathering data, and your probability of knowing what you're doing gets better as you do experiments. But I don't know that it ever goes to one, that you are absolutely certain, because there's always another experience, some other data. Something may happen one day that will show you that what you thought was the way it is not. So you must always be open-minded. Never get to the point that you're sure you've got it and everybody else is wrong. That's not helpful.
Right.
But that you have something that works and you continue to experiment and you continue to be open to the possibility that there's some better approach or some better understanding. And that's the way, I think, to go through life. If you approach life like that, then you can eventually solve those problems. If you don't methodically try to experiment, then generally it's kind of random. You may hit on a solution, you may not. You may hit on a solution and not even realize it's a solution because you jump from thing to thing to thing too quickly. So you have to take your time. You know, when you do these experiments in living, you might think, or experiments in interpretation, you have to work at it for some months before you get enough data to know whether you're actually, you know, doing the right thing or not. So take a slow, methodical approach to existence, and you'll do better than if you're just kind of running around like the chicken with his head off, you know, kind of randomly try this, try that, because you're desperate, and you just follow your emotions to jump to solutions and jump to conclusions, and then that doesn't work, and then you jump to something else, and pretty soon it's nothing works, and, you know, you get into that kind of a tailspin. And it's hard to climb out of that sort of a hole because now your belief is that nothing works. And if you have that belief, how are you ever going to get past it? You know, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So again, coming from a metaphysical kind of background, you know, we're used to talking about light and energy. And so now we're being introduced to data. And mm-hmm. you also talk... you know, we've all heard, yes, we're all one energy. But the rule set on this planet or at this existence is that we separate out everything. So everything's been separated out. But yet we're still one thing. So this consciousness, this data is still really one thing, but we've separated it out. And then we've gone even further separation so that we have the soul, the higher self, the oversoul. And so we had all of the guides, everything is separate. And yet we're trying to grow and understand and learn. It must make it so much more difficult, but that's the rule set of this planet, correct?
Well, the perception of separateness is mainly an interpretation that we who live here in this multiplayer virtual reality extend to everything. We look at everything as separate because we're in this game, and the rule set in this game that we're in is our physics. That's the rule set that defines how things work here.
Okay.
You know, you drop things, they fall. You know, you have all these rules about how our existence works. And because of the kind of rule set we have, everything is separate. You know, the physicists came to the conclusion that no two objects can occupy the same point in space. Well, that's basically a rule of separateness. Everything must be separate. And that's our viewpoint. So when we talk about the oversoul, the higher self, guides, that's just us projecting this sense of separateness because we have a belief that everything that exists outside of us is a separate thing. That's a belief. And that's just another one of those beliefs at the bone level that we have. And so when we interact with that larger consciousness system and it is interacting with us as an individual, then that's a guide, you see. And that system, that consciousness system, will interact with us with a personality, with a sense of humor, and will interact with us consistently in any way that works well for us. So if what works well for you is a female guide or a male guide or one that's very stern or one that's very gentle, you will get that because that's what you need and that's what interacts with you. That's just the larger consciousness system's way of interacting with you to help you evolve because that's our point. And it's trying to help us do that because, you know, that's why we're in this trainer and we are a part of that system. And we believe in separateness because that's the way our reality works. So we make guides separate. We make our oversoul separate. We make all of that stuff separate. that's not really the way it is. It really is that we are all consciousness. Now, we are individuated units of consciousness. So, yes, we're separate in the sense that, different files in your computer are separate. You know, they're all in the same computer. They're all shared in the same memory. Their ones and zeros are scattered all over memory places, but there are pointers that say, oh, this belongs in this group, that belongs in that group. So we're all part of the same consciousness, but we are individuated because that is the path for faster and better evolution so that we can interact with each other. Otherwise, you'd have one monolithic consciousness interacting with itself. Well, that's a hard way to evolve. There's not a lot of choices there. You know, there's not a lot of honest decisions that have to be made. It separates itself, you know, like cell division. You know, it separates itself into units that can interact with each other and each have to have free will so that they can do that. Now you've got lots of choices going on. So we are part of the mechanism of the whole evolving. You know, it is evolving, but again, it is not separate, you see. It is evolving, but we are it. It is us, and everything else is it too, because the only thing that's fundamental is consciousness. Everything else is virtual. So this reality is a virtual reality, but say, when Uncle Fred dies and he's in that other reality, that's a virtual reality too. That's not the reality. You know, it's not, well, we have the physical one and the non-physical one in there that Uncle Fred's in, you know, that's the real reality. It's not like that. That's just another virtual reality, and that there is a rule set there. There's a physics there. There are things you can do and can't do there, and it has its own purpose. And the purpose is basically the same in that it's to help consciousness evolve, because that's the name of the game that we're in. And you can be in this physical matter reality trainer, or you can be doing other things toward that evolution. This isn't the only game, but it's one of the main games, because this physical reality trainer is a fast track in evolution, and that's why we come here and do this. When you are not in such a constrained reality, evolution is a little harder to get a grip on. Remember, it's just data, your consciousness, and you're exchanging data. And you have to interpret what that data means. And if you're in a reality system where there is very few constraints, it's very hard to know what you're doing, you know, to interpret that data correctly. Now, we have this physics that gives us all these constraints, and that gives us a sense of feedback. We do something, we get a reaction, something comes back. That's a harder thing to get if it's just data being exchanged at a level. So we need this virtual reality to help us evolve. So we are all one thing, and there is, you know, we are an individuated consciousness, and part of that consciousness is engaged in this game. Now you say, well, how's that part of it? Well, if you were playing a video game of a virtual reality, part of your consciousness would be focused on that game. But that doesn't mean you couldn't go up and make a trip to the refrigerator to get something to drink. You know, part of that consciousness is doing other things as well. Part of that consciousness knows that you should be doing your homework instead of playing the video game. You know, but you multiprocess in different levels as consciousness all the time. Well, this is just one level of our consciousness. But to make it separate and say, well, we're here and we're separate, and then we have this higher consciousness, this higher self, and it's separate and it's doing these things, and then we have this oversoul, you know, and it gathers up all of our experience and it does these things. What we're doing is taking the different functions of our consciousness, of our single one consciousness, and pigeonholing them, giving them separate titles, separate names, and because that's the way we perceive reality, is in separateness, because that's the way it is here. But it's all one thing. It's just all one consciousness, and we are all part of the same thing. And all consciousness shares data. So that's how we can communicate with each other. Much of our communication is not verbal, like you and I are now doing this verbally. Mm-hmm. But much of our communication with other people is nonverbal, and I don't mean body language. I mean nonverbal in a telepathic sense, where we share information You know, the New Age community, it's vibes, right? You get good vibes or bad vibes, but it's the same thing. It's just we trade, and it's those vibes and that non-physical communication is why when you are very positive, positive things begin to happen around you, because that's what you're tuned into. That's what you're focused on. That's what you accept in your reality. The other stuff that otherwise you would find that would be cold and prickly, you don't relate to it. It just passes by. You know, it's like an unpleasant event that doesn't touch you. Because you no longer interpret that as, oh no, how could they do that to me? You've grown past that. So now it's just there, and that's just the way it is, and it goes by, and it's not prickly or cold anymore. So it's by changing yourself. Suddenly the world gets better, not because you change the world, but because you're interpreting the world differently. And as your lessons change, the things that happen to you, the challenges that you're faced with, change to be in consonance with the kind of lessons you need to learn. So if you're down on the bottom of that barrel and the lessons you need to learn are those tough, you know, hit me between the eyes with a two before to get my attention kind of lessons, then it's rough going. If you evolve to the point where your lessons are maybe a little more subtle, then life generally tends to be very pleasant and very good, and you don't have to be hit between the eyes with a two before to get your attention. They already have your attention. So now it's polishing. It's growing. There's still a lot of things to do, but it's not at the same rough and tumble area of existence as most people live their lives in. I guess that's another point. This is not a graduate school.
Yeah.
This is at least an elementary school, if not a preschool. This is a place where young consciousness learns the rudimentary facts of being, the ways to be. And this is not a place where all of us advanced people, everybody here thinks they're advanced, that's just the way it is. But that's not the case. We're all struggling in an elementary school trying to figure this out. So,
yeah. So we were only going to do a half hour. We've gone over, which is fine. What would you say then would be the most important thing for people? I mean, obviously you've come from a different background. You came, from out-of-body experiences. You've come from, obviously there's a lot of information out there about meditation. What are the things that help us? You talked about love, and I do like that, it's something you give. It's not something, it's not something that you're supposed to control or have conditions or have expectations. But we do, and I think we confuse love with relationships. And mm-hmm. I like you said something about, love is, or relationships are more about need, or our expectation, or we confuse need with love.
Yes, we tend to fall in need with other people.
Yeah.
They meet our needs, and that's that's not love. Yeah, right. All love is unconditional. If there are conditions, it's not love. So love is a giving. It's something you give away. It's not something that you trade. I'll do yours if you do mine. That's not love. That's something else. So,
but if there was one thing, what would you say? Or if there was something that you could.
Well, one thing will depend on the person I was talking to and where they were in this process of evolving. But in general, I would say that first approach life with open-minded skepticism. Right. If you don't have that approach, everything else won't work, because you'll just be chasing your tail inside of your belief systems. If you're going to break out of the belief systems, you need open-minded skepticism. Secondly, once you get open-minded skepticism, you need to be consistent and you need to experiment. You need to try things, and you need to try them over a long enough time to where you really collect enough data to make some decisions. Thirdly, wherever you are and whatever state you're in, however you think your life is, whether you think life sucks or whether life's great or whatever, know that you can change that. It's not the hand that's being dealt you that you have to play. It's the hand you're dealing yourself because of who and what you are. You just have to outgrow the need for those kinds of lessons. Once you outgrow the need for those kinds of lessons, they will fall away. And you will find your life is a whole lot better. So focus on the positive. Know that you can change things. And try your best to have your life and your decisions be about somebody else other than yourself. As long as you are self-focused, as long as it's about you and your needs and you're feeling good and you're, the things that, if you could manipulate the world and reality to be just the way you wanted it, if that's your focus, that you have to manipulate things to make them suit you. And that is basically our focus in most of our life, with our jobs, with our relationships and everything else. We're always trying to make it suit us. If rather you just work on yourself and let everything else fall into place as it does, deal with everything else gracefully. Yes, there will be things you'll have to deal with that will be unpleasant, but deal with them with love and grace. And you will see that your whole life will change. You will end up in a much happier place. And that doesn't mean you get a raise at work and you get a new car. It just means that your life is more effective, and you are a much happier person. Because new cars and raises don't make you a happy person. That's not what it's about. That's not what delivers peace and quality to your life. Those things probably more than anything else deliver more hassle to your life. They're encumbering more than they are freeing. And you think, if I was just rich, that would be great. Then I'd really have time to meditate.
Yeah.
But it's not like that. Those things tend to deliver more problems than they deliver benefits.
Right. Well, it's been a great honor. I've really appreciated this. But before we go, I promised Mike over here we would talk about Path 11. Do you want to talk a little bit about what we've been working on?
Path 11 is a very creative, young company making video. I almost say videotapes, but that tells you how old I am, right? Videotapes. Nobody's heard of a videotape anymore. What's that? They make videos, they make movies, and they have put one out. I guess it's now been 4 or 5 months that it's been out, and it's about, it's for people who are just struggling with these ideas. It's for it's maybe at the level you would expect to go to public broadcasting or something. So it's meant for the wide audience. Yeah, it's meant for the masses, for the wide audience. And it's an introduction to the concepts that life goes on. It's not just physical. That consciousness, survives the physical death. That this, again, it's just a virtual reality, and that this is not the whole game. This is just a part. And that these ideas, though, are very new to a lot of people, just to consider that idea. Well, it's part of their religion, but, a lot of that religion is they just do it because that's what mom and dad did. And, it's not really at a very deep level. So this is a film that gives people a little bit of information that opens their mind a little about the possibility of life going beyond the physical. And they're also working on a whole series of films to fall in behind that. So, up-and-coming company. Go to the website and look up Path 11. You can go to the website and look up mybigtoe.com. And you can go to the websites and look up MBT events to see about workshops and things that are going on. So those would, and all of those kind of interact with each other. Whichever one of those you go to, you can probably get to the others from it. So.
All right. Well, again, it's been a great pleasure. I really enjoyed talking with you. I actually hope to get your books at some point, and maybe we'll do another interview on your books, because I've actually only been interviewing you from your pages.
The free notes that I pass out to the people coming to my workshop. And those are there just to raise questions. So the people come in with some questions, and evidently they did that for you. They did. They did raise some questions. What? What do you mean? Light and energy is just a metaphor.
Yeah.
But Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it.
No, I have too. Thank you very much.
I hope we can do something again.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So thank you very much, and we will be back in the fall with a new lineup. So looking forward to it.